Shoulder to shoulder, hand to hand, nails to nails.
Thou wilt not cower in the dust, Maryland, my Maryland. Thy beaming sword shall never rust, Maryland, my Maryland. Remember Carroll's sacred trust, remember Howard's warlike trust, and all thy slumbers with the just, Maryland, my Maryland.
Frank Vespi and Gary Quill here today on our Off to the Races podcast. Gary taking a little bit of a break from his daily GQ approach handicapping, but will be joining us on a regular basis to talk about some of the handicapping tools, tips, and techniques that he uses as he churns out the GQ approach. Gary, what's happening?
Hey, Frank. It's a great day, and glad that we're taking the time to do this little podcast about different topics on horse racing.
Well, we are, in fact, doing that. And the first topic that you had wanted to speak of and that we're going to lead off this series of podcasts with is going to be talking about speed, and particularly early speed and kind of pace handicapping and pace scenarios. And obviously, Gary, you know as well as anybody, the kind of old joke is, you know, in sports and everything else, speed kills. And you know, certainly if you could figure out how the pace is going to play out in any given race, you're going to have a pretty big advantage as to how you handicap that race.
Exactly. And the ironic thing is taking this topic of speed, my personal handicapping style is I hate to land on the best horse being a speed horse, unless, of course, I believe he or she is loan speed in a race, because kind of like betting a speed horse in a horse race is like betting the under in a sporting event. And let me explain. When you bet the under, okay, the under is great, you know, obviously from the beginning of the game, but as the game goes on, that under could turn into a loser before the game's even halfway over. And that's how I feel about speed horses. And when I back speed horses, it's like you're on pins and needles when the gate opens, because you know if you've made a wager on a speed horse, if he's not there right out of the gate, you might as well just start looking at the next race. So that's my analogy as far as speed, because when you bet speed, you'll know if you have a fighting chance in the first couple jumps. And then after probably the first furlong or two, depending on how far the race is, that it'll depend on your tools as well. It's like if you had mapped out a race and said, well, I think this horse is loan speed, so I'm backing him, and then all of a sudden, here comes the race. It's a, you know, two-turn race. Your horse gets out there, and then all of a sudden, there's a jock on a horse who's never seen anywhere close to the lead. It's about 35-1, and the jock figures, well, you know, maybe he did his homework and said, hey, there's only one horse out there, so I'll try to engage my horse early. So that's horse racing. You can handicap it and figure out how the race is going to play out, but those type of intangibles can also come into play and totally screw you up. So with speed, that's the Achilles heel with backing a speed horse. You'll know how you're going to do very early in the race.
Well, that's certainly true. But at the same time, I always feel like if you've got a horse that you like in a race, maybe fits on class, he's in good form, whatever, and the pace scenario, whatever it is, seems to advantage a horse like him. You know, he's the only speed, or he's a stalker and is going to sit off a couple speed horses, or a closer in a race full of speed. That, to me, turns into a great bet. When you've got the horse that fits on your first cut of handicapping, and then you look at the kind of pace scenario, then you're looking at a horse that you can really strongly back, because kind of everything is pointing at that horse.
Exactly. And like you had said, you know, that is a very bettable type of race, in that you you went through the scenario of the pace. You know, how many closers are there? Stalkers, horses I call plotters that are kind of just mid-pack, and then they may make a move late. And how that pace sets up, if you see it's filled with speed and you have a horse that can come off the pace and or vice versa, lone speed, that is where a lot of the singles in your exotic horizontal wagers come in. And that's hard to pick out from previous races in that you see a horse that you say, oh, he has early speed, but here's a race or two that he wasn't on top and he just quit. You know, something wrong with him. Well, that a lot of the speed horses are like that. And the jock knows that that's the horse's running style. And if the horse either gets a bad break, doesn't get on top, or there's some unexpected pressure that the horse faced early and never even got to the lead, and the horse just knows, the jockey just knows with that clock in his head that this isn't going to be his day on this horse. So he just takes care of the horse. And so with speed horses especially, whenever I see a running line where the horse, you know, kind of broke halfway decent, maybe was second or third by about a half to a length, and then at the next call was third by seven, went up losing by double digits, that doesn't concern me because the jock just knew the horse wasn't going to be the winner that day based on his running style.
Yeah, and now it seems to me, Gary, that there's sort of three different kind of things, you pace scenarios, I guess you'd say, that you'd be looking to kind of scope out. I'm simplifying, obviously, in a race. And it's kind of like, do you have a lone speed situation? Do you have a race that figures to come from kind of the stalkers or mid-pack horses? And then, or that's one and two. And then three being, do you have a situation where you got a whole bunch of speed horses and now you're looking for a horse to come out of the back? Is that how you kind of look at this?
Right. I make little hieroglyphic notes noting each horse's typical running style. And then as I go back over the entire field, I just take inventory on how many I noted with early speed, how many closers, how many have tactical or the stalkers. And from there alone, I can come up with who I want to back in that race. Again, my prejudice as far as a handicapper is I tend to give more credence to horses that can come from off the pace. And anytime I look at a horse that has, you know, three or more horses that are the need the lead type, I tend to kind of discount their chances because of the famous pace meltdown that may occur, rely on the closers. But then again, you have a race like that, the race is run, and the horse who got out on top goes gate to wire because the horse had a 1 to 2 length lead and was able to set a reasonable pace. And you know, you're looking back at your form saying, where was all this other speed, you know? So again, you know, we live and die by past performances, but the reality is when the gates open, who knows what's going to happen.
Well, that's certainly true. Now, I always feel like if I'm like a situation where you're talking about, like if I'm doing a multi-race wager, say, and I might cover a couple horses in a given race, in a race with a bunch of speed, I usually am going to keep one of the speeds, not always, but I'm often going to keep one of the speeds in my multi-race wager on the theory of just what you said. Somebody might survive, you know, they might be the one who gets out to the lead. So who's the most likely of the speed horses to survive if one of them actually does?
Oh, that's true. Plus, you have to safeguard against a track bias. You know, if the track, you know, that's the danger of, you know, making, you know, pick four, pick five, pick six wagers, that all of a sudden you see you're in the first or second leg of this, and all of a sudden you see a heavy speed bias, or, you know, all the speed is dying and everybody's coming from off the pace down the middle of the track. So, yeah, definitely if you can spread yourself that much, definitely keep at least one of the speed horses in there. And as you said, the most likely to survive a speed duel.
Now, one of the things you said a minute ago on Tatacha, you said you make sort of hieroglyphic markings about who's different running styles. And sometimes I'll do that, like in a race where I feel like, you know, maybe it's a big field with a lot of horses that have fairly consistent running styles. I'll actually do it as like a little diagram, you know, like all the way on the left, I'll put the numbers of the horses that figure to want the lead. And then, you know, going towards the right and on the far right will be the horses that are closing from the clouds. And, you know, sometimes visually that helps me get a sense of, is there a lot of speed or is this really a bunch of horses that are going to be third, but really only one horse that wants the lead, or however that's going to play out. So talk about your, how do you mark this? What are your hieroglyphic marks?
Well, my
personal, you know, Egyptian dancing characters, like some pyramids and
actually,
stuff.
I guess you could call it shorthand in a way. You know, for speed horses that I feel need to be on the lead, I just put an SP. Horses that have tactical speed, I'll put, you know, T, you know, TAC, SP. Closers, I'll abbreviate CLSR. Horses that are kind of stalkers, or not even stalkers, they're the tactical speed ones, but horses that you look back and it's like, you know, where was the last time this horse won, but the last few races didn't show early speed and didn't show a closing kick, kind of just kind of ran evenly, that dreaded, you know, six-letter word in the comment line that says the horse had no significant say in the pace. You know, it was just in the race. So I even note those, because those horses are almost like tosses. You know, they're in the race, but they're not going to help or hinder any of the pace scenarios.
So let me ask you this. Now, when you get a horse, and you see this a lot with, particularly with lightly raced horses, you know, or horses that haven't won a lot, they'll have run pretty good races, say coming from mid pack or stalking in their last few races, but their only wins were on the lead. How do you interpret that horse?
Obviously, the horse needs to be on the lead, and it may be other outside factors that are there in the past performance. It may have been the jock. There are some jocks who are good gate riders who can get a horse who is versatile in that they can lay off the pace or show early speed. There are some trainers based on, you know, when a horse gets claimed or whatever, there are trainers who train for speed, and a horse's performance will dictate how what their running style is. So what I try to do to answer your question, as far as the horse showed early speed in past races, but there are some other races where it kind of came off the pace, I then look at the distance of the race. You know, perfect examples, you know, in some of the races, you know, you'll see horses, you'll just look down at, you know, the points of call area of the past performances, and you'll see sprinkled in there where, okay, you see all ones going across, but then you'll see some other races where the horse isn't on the lead. So you look over to the distance, and maybe all the ones are in the two-turn races or 1 mile, where the horse has speed going a distance, but when the horse cuts back to a sprint, not so much. So you got to be cognizant of that. You know, you have to look outside the boundaries of the calls of the race to see if the horse has early speed, regardless of the distance or regardless of the surface. There's a lot of horses who they're speed, speed, speed. First time on the turf, they're coming off the pace. It makes no sense to me, but maybe, you know, horsemen and there's different running styles. Maybe just the way the horse, you know, feels the grass, you know, it doesn't have that burst of energy coming out of the gate. So, yeah, I mean, speed, whether it's lone speed or pressured, you know, sprint versus routes, dirt versus turf, even versus fast tracks. You got to take all that into consideration in trying to figure out today, on today's surface, the jock who's riding, is it the same trainer? Even the condition, you know, maybe the horse was speed at a lower class level, but, you know, if it steps up in class, there are some other horses that are going a bit quicker than he's used to, or he or she.
Whichever.
Right.
Frank Vespi and Gary Quill here talking speed and pace scenarios and handicapping stuff here on our Off to the Races podcast on theracingbiz.com. And so, Gary, I guess let's talk about a couple of races here had taking place on Friday at Laurel Park. You had identified the eighth race and the fifth race, because we like to do things backwards here as races that you wanted to talk about. And there are actually two interesting and different kind of handicapping challenges here. In one of these races, there's a bunch of speed. Speed is easy to find. The question is, which of it's going to survive and where are other horses going to be? In the other race, you're kind of scratching your head going, well, maybe this horse could go. So let's start with the eighth. It's a two other than second level allowance optional claimer, $45,000 purse, going 6 furlongs, 3/4 of a mile. We got 1, 2, 3, 8 horses in here. And I'm looking at this race and I'm thinking, there's a lot of horses that figure to want to be in the mix early.
Definitely. And you hit the nail on the head. If what I came up with was horses either need to be on the lead or just want to be off the lead. But speaking of these eight that you and I both, you know, on the surface say, you know, their speed, you know, from top to bottom, there's a horse that could be sneaky off the pace. And the horse that I'm talking about is a 4-year-old filly, Monet Davis. And the reason why I'm saying she could be sneaky off the pace is look at her races. She ran 6 times, and the shortest distance she's run was 7 furlongs in her last race on a good track in a minor stakes race. Prior to that, she was running first level allowance and optional claimers, going 2 turns at Tampa and at Penn, and even she and made her debut on the grass, where she didn't show early speed. She actually came off the pace. So that talks to my angle of, hey, you know, the horse didn't show early speed on the grass, but look, next time out, she went gate to wire going a mile and 40 yards at Tampa on the dirt. So I think that one of the sneaky off the pace type of selections could be this horse, which really is no shocker, regardless of how she would possibly win, because she is the 3-to-1 favorite in this race. The fact that even though she showed early speed going 7, she ran behind quite an amazing 3-year-old filly in Shimmering Aspen, who won by nearly a half a dozen lengths. And the interesting fact is that Monet Davis, who had the lead up until through the second call of the 7-furlong race, that part of the comment was pressured, which basically obviously means that it wasn't like she was on top by a head going at a leisurely pace. The fractions were quite quick, and she obviously didn't have enough in the tank, or her class level just wasn't there, and she wasn't expected to be there in the end, being a 30 to 1 shot. But she held fourth out of a 7-horse field. So if anyone in this 6-furlong sprint can be somewhat tardy from the gate, or let others take the lead early, it's her. And also a long shot, number 7, if I was a boy, 20 starts to her credit, and sneaky running line in that she didn't pick up her feet or hooves as the 9-5 favorite in her last in a field of 5, but that was on a sloppy track, and her best finish out of 3 sloppy track starts was a 3rd, where her speed figure was the lowest of any of the speed figures that she's clocked. So she has the ability to come off the pace and may be an interesting one to back at 10-1, number 7 in the 8th race, if I was a boy.
Now, it seems like to me in this race, the speed is probably coming from the 5, 6, and 8 here primarily. Is that how you saw this as well? That's a little firefighter, Liz's Table Girl, Jessica Krupnik.
Yes, because even though the 3, Lady Bellamy, showed early speed, that was the first time in her 9-race career she had the lead. Plus, it was going 7 furlongs. It was the first time she was going 7 furlongs. So there's another little angle where she was coming off a 5.5-furlong race where she sat in a nice tactical stalking position and wound up winning by 2, which, by the way, the horse that ran second came back to be a winner. So naturally, coming out of a 5.5-furlong race where she was only a little bit more than 2 lengths back when they ran 45-1 for 4, she obviously was going to be on the early lead going 7, and she ran a decent race there. But as we cut back to 6, she'll be in a stalking phase. So a long-winded answer to your question, yes, I see the 5, 6, and 8 as the controlling speed.
Couldn't even remember what the question was.
As the controlling speed in here. And the interesting thing about the 5, little firefighter, is, you know, you look at the last race, it's like, oh, she didn't get on the lead and she quit. And then she, you know, she's only raced 4 times. And her debut, she got off slow and showed a very little late interest. And both of those starts are sandwiched in between 2 gate-to-wire wins. Well, the bookends of those races were both on turf, whereas her gate-to-wire wins, one came on a fast track, one came on a sloppy sealed track. So that there's your reason to say that, yeah, the 5 little firefighters definitely going to be one of the trio who's going to be dictating the pace.
Yeah, although I'll tell you, the horse of the speed horses that to me is most interesting here, and I don't have the odds in front of me, so I'm probably just being Captain Obvious, but Liz's Cable Girl, you know, she had the 3 wins in a row, ran through her J-break conditions, won an A other than at Monmouth by 5. And her last 2, you look at the horses that she was in against, you look at those company lines as she's trying to make the lead, Bustin' Out in the 11 North, Bustin' Out is extremely fast out of the gate, and they go 44-1, and she's chasing that and throws in the towel. And then Crab Cakes in the 2 other than at Laurel on September 15th. Crab Cakes, a multiple stakes winner, won the Maryland Million Distaff on Saturday and is very, very fast. So this is a horse that has seen in her last couple of starts some really speedy horses out of the gate. She might be the speed of the speed out of this group.
Oh, definitely. If you look at the first two calls. And, you know, here's one of my soapboxes as far as time. and even when it's at the same track, even though we all do it, and we look at, you know, in a speed race, we look at that four furlong time, and our eyes bug out when we see a sub 45, you know, for a quarter. But I'm sorry, not quarter, half. So
that would be a slow quarter.
Yes. Yeah. So
they're just walking.
Right. And my Monmouth Park is typically very, very quick times. But no, I'm not taking anything away from Liz's Cable Girl, who gets the 7-2 nod, second choice in this particular race. Definitely, and rightfully so. Just as I had mentioned about Monet Davis, running, you know, behind Shimmering Aspen. Yeah, Crab Cakes is probably the best sprinter that's ever run this the past 2 years, or at least female sprinter at Laurel. So there's no shame in backing up against her. And she never got the Liz's Cable Girl never got the lead at Monmouth behind Busting Out. So prior to that, won three in a row from gate to wire and had no problem clearing the field. So I would tend to agree that Liz's Cable Girl should be the one who gets the first call right out of the gate.
So the key for sort of wrapping this race up. So the thing to watch for here, I guess, is really, you know, do those three or four horses go? What is the early, you know, what do things look like in the early scramble out of the gate? Who makes the lead? Are they pressured? And how does that all play out? And then does it set up later for the Lady Bellamy's and If I Was a Boy's to come running at the end of the race?
Yeah, it would be, well, you know what, the more we look at this, you know, even though the eight's early speed, you know, the competition that she's run against, she may not be interested in getting tied up into the lead. And she has come off the pace to win. So it's not like she needs the lead. So it may turn into be a speed duel between Little Fire Fighter and Liz's Cable Girl. And who knows, based on how the track plays, they might just run 1-2 if they're allowed to get out there on top. But it's definitely an interesting race where there's, like, no deep closer. If you want to think that there's a horse that's going to come from way off the pace, I'd say the 7, If I Was a Boy, is probably the one who will be last going into the turn, but definitely a interesting race and one that will be interesting to see how it plays out based on how we've doped it out on paper.
See if we're the dopes or not, in other words.
Right.
So turning back, I know you want to talk about race 5 as well, which is a 16,000 Neverwin 2 claimer on the turf going a mile. And this race sort of poses the opposite problem, which is figuring out what – you got a lot of horses that either aren't going to be running at all early or running just a little. So it's kind of where's the pace going to come from? You got a bunch of horses stretching out from sprints. This one's sort of a muddle, and what do you make of it?
Well, there's 16 entered, only 10 get in based on the turf course that they're running on, which I'm just going to digress for a second. It would be great if Laurel's 5 different turf courses, if the past performances –
6.
I thought it was 6. I didn't want to overstate. But, yeah, the
it's
6
A
different –
through F. I can never remember them all, but I know F is Fort Marcy, so there's got to be 6.
Yeah, it's all along oh gosh, we're gonna
exactly.
We're gonna have a ton of people emailing us, but yeah, all I know is that the Kelso is the C course.
Right. Acceler is the E.
Right. Fort
Marcy. Whatever. But yeah, you're right. So anyway, you're to your point.
Yeah. So right. So my soapbox. It would be great to know what turf configuration each turf race is being run on, you know, because it's like, you know, they make a big deal of it, you know, when the horses are in the paddock being saddled. Oh, this is on the Fort Marcy. Okay. Is that supposed to give me some kind of handicapping edge? If I knew that last night when I was handicapping, maybe it would. If I had statistics on how the races were run on the Fort Marcy versus the All Along versus the Kelso and whatever else, Acceler. So I digress. So on to the 10 possible horses in here with the 6 also eligible to. Whenever I'm doing the GQ approach, I always hate tons of also eligibles, especially when there's the most logical horse sitting on the also eligible, because I won't put an also eligible in there. But here comes Ray Day and scratches, and 95 sitting on the outside gets in and blows up all the handicapping. But the couple interesting things, since we're actually talking about speed, is a couple of horses in here that you might say they don't have speed, but at least from my handicapping brain, I say they do. And one of them is the 4 T Sizzle. T Sizzle ran a mile in an off the turf race last time out and came away kind of quickly, and then quickly fell back and was a non-factor. But 2 races back, he ran a sprint and showed a closing kick. But if you look back at his previous 2-turn turf race, there he is up near the lead, pressuring the pace. So here's where I say you just can't look at, you know, the running lines, the points of call over the last couple races without looking over to the far left to see, like, what surface was it? Was it today's surface? And was it at today's distance? So you had to go 5 races back in order to find a comparable 2-turn turf race, and he was up near the lead. So I threw him, T Sizzle, into the, you know, speed going long category. The interesting speed horse in here for me was the 6th. Just Call Me KL. I pointed out he's a typical turf horse, only wants turf. The one time they ran him on the dirt over the last 10 races, he did nothing. So he's definitely the turf horse. He's been running 2 turns, a mile, mile and a 16th forever. And his 2nd race back from a short layoff, they bring him back going 5.5. He obviously gets outrun early and run 7th
and late
3. Yeah, right. Well, it's sneaky in that in the stretch he was 6th by 7.5 and wound up finishing 7th but by 3. So I mean, for me, and I would think that most handicappers are looking more to the how many lengths behind at the point of call the horse was versus their position in the race. So to me, this horse was running just as he typically would, in that he was asked to sprint and the race was half over before he got out of 2nd gear and showed a little late interest. He comes back this race going back to 2 turns, and it's the famous 3rd race after a layoff angle. But the interesting thing that stood out was if you look at his races where he's had the early lead going long, and he held the lead, but then in the stretch lost the lead, and then once he lost the lead, just faded. That happened three times in the past performances that we can see, and the condition of the turf all three times was good. So here's a horse that obviously really doesn't care for a little give in the turf, or basically a speed horse, a course that has give in it, is obviously going to be more tiring than running like he or she is running on the asphalt down the road where the turf is firm. And so the one, number six, just call me KL, is a very interesting speed play in a turf race that I don't see a lot of speed in the 10 logical ones outside of a couple of the also eligibles who may get in. Did you look into the race that deep to concur?
Yeah, I mean, I largely do concur. I mean, I think, you know, the logical speed who is not going to draw in here is the 13, I think, Silver Romeo.
Yes.
But he's not going to get in, chances are. So then you're, mm-hmm. as you say, you're looking at a bunch of horses. Now, the one thing that can be a little tricky is you've got the two Mr. J, you already talked about T-Sizzle, the seven Chili Magician, maybe others in here who are mostly running in sprints, who are now stretching out, and that, you know, those are horses that can show speed. And I think notably the Chili Magician, if you go back close to the bottom of his PPs, his last few races down there, he's actually found himself in a pretty good spot going in two turn races, you know, three or four lengths off the lead. He's actually a horse who pace scenario is he might sit the right trip here. It might be T-Sizzle and Just Call Me KL sort of 1-2, and he might be sitting right behind them in third.
Yeah. So, and I had noted that as well, that the last five races have all been 5.5 furlong sprints. Why they cut him back, I don't know, because prior to that, he was going mile and a 16th, mile and an 8th on the turf. So
and
maybe,
they broke
maybe,
his maiden doing it.
Yeah, right, yeah. And the interesting thing with him, just opposite of Just Call Me KL, it appears he does his best running on a turf that has a little give. You know, his last win came at Laurel on a yielding on track on 5.5 furlongs. Prior to that, he broke his maiden also on a yielding Pimlico turf course. So both of his wins came on a yielding turf course. And I don't believe the turf will be yielding for this race.
Well, I may be out there hosing it down tonight. You never know. So, so there you have it. So go ahead.
Before you finish up, I'll throw in one other possibility from the different trainer angle, and we'll go to the outside to the 10 expectations. The horse changed barns to the Claudio Gonzalez barn from Keith Nations prior to his last start. The horse finally won against winners at the bottom 5,000, just kind of blew the doors off these horses by 7 lengths, going 7 furlongs on the dirt. The last time the horse ran on turf was when they shipped him up to Suffolk for the easy money. And the horse kind of showed some early speed on the turf and ran third by just under 2 lengths. But again, here's my angle with Claudio Gonzalez. his training ways seems to get early speed in the horses. And if the 7 furlong dirt race was any indication where the horse didn't have early speed, but by the time they hit the stretch, the horse just took off. Who knows, as the horse stretches out, gets back onto the turf where in the past it has shown a little early speed, expectations may get a nice stalking trip behind the aforementioned horses who are likely to be on the speed. So it's 6-1. I think expectations, even though going way up in class into this 16,000 claimer, 9 winners of 3, maybe one to watch.
All right. We'll throw in expectations in our multi-race wagers. And so those are two races from Laurel for Friday, and more generally some thoughts on handicapping speed and looking what to look for and maybe a little bit about how to find it. Next week, we're going to be coming up on the Breeders' Cup when we talk about this. Gary, what do you want to talk about next week? Probably got to be related to the Breeders' Cup. We'll have to work on that, but we'll be talking Breeders' Cup next week when we reconvene for our Off to the Races podcast, talking with Gary Quill. Gary, thank you. Have a good weekend. Make some money this weekend.
You do the same, Frank. Take care.
All right. Thank you. And thanks, everybody, for listening to the Off to the Races podcast here on theracingbiz.com. Check back with us next week for more handicapping.
Songbird is digging down. She's got Martini Glass, it appears. Rick Porte can go to the winner's circle. Songbird's going to win the Delaware Handicap.
But Catch a Glimpse, this filly is this good. Catch a Glimpse to win the Penn Mile.
They throw it down in the classic. Imperative, Matt King Cole. Imperative rides the Country Roaster victory again.
Surging late, convinced can get there. Here comes the cat. The cat surges through. Oh, 2016 is the year of the cat.